And welcome back. Okay, so this next session, I'm going to run you through the packaging of your app, the submission process, a bit about monetization, so we're talking about in-app purchase, the options for submitting your app. So I'm going to run you through all of that kind of stuff. In this module, we're going to look at the Windows Phone Store, the ways that apps are packaged and how you build those packages, how you test your package before submission, and your options for making money out of this app. So you've got different monetization options. And then we'll actually, at the end, we'll actually do an app submission so you can see what the process is and how it's what it's like to work with that. So, okay, first of all, the Windows Phone Store. What is the store? First of all, the Windows Phone Store is a cloud service, if you like. It's this marketplace for your apps. It's run by Microsoft, and it is the only way that you can get apps onto public phones, like the general public's phones. So, as Matthijs took us through yesterday with the enterprise session, enterprises can sideload apps for their own use, and they can register to be a enterprise publisher. But for regular apps that people are going to buy through their mobile operator billing or through payment through credit card or PayPal or whatever payment mechanism, the only way you can get them on is through the store. So users buy their applications through that. You, of course, as a developer through Visual Studio, can unlock a device for testing. If you have a developer account, you can register up to 3 devices. If you have an ISV with a software department, you want to unlock more than that, you can just ask us, and through the dev portal, and we're usually pretty forgiving about giving you a few more than that. Students, and if you have registered for our App Studio, URL shown on the bottom of the slide, the App Studio is this web-based portal where you can, a web-based tool you can go and create apps without needing any programming knowledge. With that, you can unlock one device for testing your apps on. So to join the store to register, you go to dev.windowsphone.com or dev.windows.com. It's just one registration process, gets you into both stores. The charge at the moment is $90 a year for individual registrations. If you want to do the enterprise company registration, that's $99 a year. The company accounts have additional verification processes. So once you've got, one registration allows you to publish to both stores. If you're a student, if you haven't joined our DreamSpark program, why haven't you? It's free. If you're in full-time education, you can join DreamSpark for free, and that gives you access to all of our developer tools, the kind of professional editions of them. And that also gives you entry into our stores, registration into our stores. So that's all free for you if you're in full-time education. If you've got an MSDN subscription, certain MSDN subscriptions may also supply a registration token that you can use to register for nothing as well. So, dev.windowsphone.com or dev.windows.com is where you go to do that. And we've really actually improved the whole experience for developers recently. A lot of stuff was announced at Build recently. One that's particularly exciting for a lot of developers is that previously to register for the store, you had to have a credit card. We've removed that requirement now. You can use PayPal to actually pay for your developer's registration. And we've got, names must have, new apps must have, they must reserve names now. So all names will be unique to make it easier for end users, customers to differentiate between apps. And of course, we've got the universal support for universal apps. So you can more easily create apps that target both Windows and Windows Phone. Certification is much faster. Apps and updates published at least twice as fast, sometimes within 1 hour. And we got much better detailed and more timely reporting. The The actual policies that your apps must conform to in order to be accepted into the store, and we do obviously test apps when you submit them. That's now aligned, so they're the same for Windows and Windows Phone. And we've improved the way you can earn money. So we've improved ad SDKs for advertising in your app. For users as well, auto updates. So absolutely, if you submit an update into the store, users will now get those updates silently. So they don't actually have to go to the store tile and actually deliberately say, install these updates. So that's an improved user experience. And we've got aligned app pricing tiers between the Windows and Windows Phone versions of your app. So we're bringing all that together to make it much easier to create one app. And actual fact, we also, and I'll talk a little bit more about this later on, if you register a Windows app and a Windows Phone app with the same registered name, a name that you have reserved, they have a shared identity, which means that a user can purchase that app in one store, in the Windows store, for use on their PC or tablet, and they can automatically then install the phone version of that app for free. It gives them entitlement to both. So loads of enhancements. And actually, while you're on the phone, the actual end user experience when working with the store app has been hugely improved. The store pano, as we call it, the panorama, now the user goes in there, gets a much better experience. They see featured apps first, then they get the quick links, and scrolling to the right, then they can get all the different categories to drill further down. And then there's a kind of curated list of apps based on your previous purchase history. We'll give you a list of apps on there that we feel you might be interested in. And once you tap on an app to go in and find out about it, the initial view is much richer than it was before. You used to have to scroll to the right to look at the screenshots. It's all now on one page, so it's much easier to see the star ratings, the tile, and the quick look at the screenshots. And you get a short description. You can just tap on that, read more to look at more. And you go over to the reviews, and you can choose how to sort the reviews, whether it's by more helpful or by star ratings, whatever works for you as an end user. Okay, so that's a bit about the store and how the store app. Well, how do you package your apps up to actually get them ready for going into the store? We've got two different packaging formats. So Silverlight apps, they build into what we call a Zap package. That's what we've always had. It's the same for Silverlight 8.1 apps as it always has been. And with Silverlight 8.1 apps, you've got both two manifests in there, a WMAP manifest and also a package.apex manifest. And I'll look a little bit more at when you use one and when you use the other in a moment. And that gives you access to all the Windows Phone 8.1 features. The Windows Phone Silverlight, the Zap is everything. It's all your resources, it's your language references, your language resources, all the images and everything, all gets into this fat pack, if you like. So whenever you ship an update with Zap packages, the user has to download the whole thing again. Much better with Windows Runtime apps, the AppX packages. It's the same format that we use with Windows Store. And the AppX manifest is the single manifest that describes the app and all the capabilities and all the requirements. Versioning is enforced, so whenever you submit an update to the store will update the versioning for you. You get incremental updates. This is a real plus with AppX packaging. So if you do an update, it will look at the package and say, oh, okay, that DLL's changed, that file has changed. And when a user installs the update, they only actually have to download and install those parts of it. And that's all handled for you transparently as the developer. You don't have to do anything to get that benefit. And this bundling also, which I'll talk about, which means that different language resources and language-specific or scale-specific images are packaged into separate little downloadable bits. And again, you get all that for free. You don't really have to do very much as a developer to get that benefit. So when a user installs your app, they just get the scaled resources that's appropriate for their phone and for their language. And if they switch to a different phone or different language later on, then it will automatically download just the extra bits it needs to keep running. Both installation to SD card. AppX packages are not encrypted, so you'll need to use obfuscation if you are concerned about your the package falling into the wrong hands and people being able to steal your IP. Zap packages are encrypted in transit. Right, let's look at the app manifest. We've got two of these, as I've called out. The app manifest describes your app, describes the name that it shows in the programs list, and it also has links to your images and logos and lists the capabilities. There's additional things in the AppX manifest, which is the WinRT apps. So you also have to include some stuff. The badge logo, splash screen is also in there as well. Oh, actually, SD card installation is shown as being AppX manifest specific on there. That's not actually true. I'm sorry for that error. That's actually both Silverlight and WinRT. So drill down into them a little bit more detail. The app information bit of it, the display name is what's displayed in the programs list on the phone. And then you also have this navigation page and entry point. This is the highlighted blue bits. You're looking at the images on the right there. For Windows runtime apps, that actually just indicates an object, a class object that you're going to go to navigate to when the app launches. WinRT, get this right. WinRT, the entry point is the app class, because in the app class in your on launch method, that's where the code you have in there, actually the frame navigates to your initial start page. The one at the top there, the Silverlight one, it's a bit different. The navigation page there actually is the initial XAML page, because in your app.xaml.cs in a Silverlight app, there's no explicit navigation to a page, so that's defined here. And you have to list all your visual assets in here. So you've got your app icon and tile. There's different tabs, but essentially both manifests, this information is recorded in different places, but it's still recorded through the app manifest. In Windows runtime apps, WinRT apps, you actually have a whole tab for this, which is the visual assets tab. Windows runtime apps, you have to define a splash screen as well. So that's all called out for you. And if you don't specify it, you'll get a big X, the warning that you haven't supplied all the required information when you go into the manifest editor. And the bundling, when you build the package, it won't work. So you have to define that. For Silverlight apps, there's nothing in the manifest about the splash screen. If you want one in a Silverlight app and you don't have to have it, you have to have a file called splashscreen.jpg. Actually in the root of your project, and then it will be used as a splash screen. And also the splash screen, you can supply different versions for the different screen resolutions for WXGA, WVGA and 720p. If you've got a 1080p phone, that uses the 720p version. So this is a little bit more drill down into the visual assets you need for a Windows runtime app. We'll see this in the manifest editor in a minute, but you can actually supply assets, the artwork, at what we call different scale factors. Now, we touched on this on the first day of the jumpstart. You can supply assets at 100%, a 1.4 scale factor, and 2.4 scale factor. In fact, what you need to do is, at least, if you're only going to supply one, supply the scale, the 240% dimensions ones. In fact, with Windows Phone, there are no Windows Phone devices out there at the moment that are at a 100% scale factor. Just to remind you, if you're wondering what I'm talking about with scale factors, this is the scale factor actually, it relates to the physical size of the device. Scaling factor. It's a calculation it's a complicated calculation figure that looks at the actual resolution of the device and the physical size of the device and the viewing distance. But essentially, all you need to know is that the scale factor that gets applied is kind of roughly aligns to the physical size of the device. So essentially, what you're doing, if you're supplying scale 240 dimensions, which are the biggest physical size images, then just supply those. And if the app is running on a lower resolution phone, then the system will automatically scale those down for you. So you're going to get a really good quality images on all different screen resolutions. So do the 240% ones. Don't actually, whatever you do, create 100% dimensions and then go into Paint or Paint.net and simply blow them up, because you're just going to end up with poor quality high-res images. Start the other way. Create your high-res ones, and then if you really want to supply different images for the lower scale factors, you can, and you can specify them in the manifest editor, but in all honesty, there's not going to be many cases where you're going to want to do that. Just supply the 240% scaled images. For Silverlight apps, much simpler. We've got a smaller list of assets you have to supply, and the size you can see there on the right. The splash screen is by in the manifest, you know, 480. Well, it's not in the manifest. Sorry, I said this before. You have to put this as an image into the root of your application called splashscreen.jpg. You can actually supply a number of different ones if you want to supply high resolution splash screens for the, you know, the 720p, the 1080p phones out there. Go to the URI that's on the bottom of the slide there if you want to find out a bit more about how to do that. The next section in the manifest is all about the capabilities, and this is just your app declaring, I need to access some of these kind of resources. And all this is really, well, it's enforced through the APIs. If you kind of call an API that requires the capability to be declared, you'll get an unauthorized use exception will be thrown when you, well, you'd hopefully pick this up at app development time, even while you're debugging. So you need to declare the capabilities that you require to use certain APIs. You much smaller list for WinRT apps than it is for Silverlight apps, and as you can see, the WinRT ones are nicely readable ones. If you drill down into the, it actually open the manifest up in the as in the XML editor, you'll see that actually the WinRT ones use similar kind of ID cap things as the Silverlight ones do. How this affects things at the point of sale is the user will see. When they come to install your app, you get that pop-up that says, this app requires access to your network, to your personal data, to your best friends list, and will send you unsolicited emails. No, it doesn't do that. I'm joking. But this is this thing saying, do you agree to your app doing all these things? And of course, everybody just says, yeah, of course I'm cool with that. But it's still part of the user giving permission for your app to actually access these resources. And if they look at that list of things it wants and you think, well, that's kind of a bit weird for what I thought was a simple calculator app, that might be a good reason for them not to install it. So don't check all of these, just check the ones you need. The next bit of the manifest is your hardware requirements. Now, this is hardware that the app absolutely requires to be on the app in order for it to function. So this isn't hardware that it could use, you know, you've coded it up to say, oh, okay, if we've got such and such a piece of hardware, a front-facing camera, then you light up some additional capabilities in your app and you show to the user something in the UI that while they're using your app says, oh, you could use a front-facing camera for this. Would you like to do it? That's different. This is where the app absolutely needs a front-facing camera, otherwise it doesn't even work. So if you check one of these, then the at the point of when the user is browsing the store, if you've got they've got a phone and they're using the store app and it hasn't got a front-facing camera, they won't see any apps which have got that front-facing camera hardware requirement checked. So this is how you limit it to really only the ones that you stop it getting installed onto phones where it won't run. Then there's a bit more information all about the packaging information. A lot of this is mainly reference to the developer, but there is versioning in there as well, which for WinRT apps is absolutely enforced. For Silverlight apps, not so much. It's under the control of the developer, but you have to make sure that whenever you release an update, the version goes up. So a bit more under your control is the Silverlight thing. This little thing at the bottom is interesting. This look at the bottom line of the image, which would be quite small for you if you're potentially. But what it says is on the WinRT one for Windows runtime apps, it says generate app bundle, and then there's a drop down. Currently says if needed. Most of the time, leave it as if needed. What that means is this is enabling this clever stuff that it looks at all the things that you have defined for your app, like different language resources, different scale specific images if you've got that, maybe language specific images, and it actually divides them all up into separate little bundles, and does it all for you. You don't have to actually. All you have to do is select this option. So most of the time. Have that. One of the other options is don't do this, which means you just get a fat pack like you do with a Silverlight app and I forget what the other one is. But you, if needed, is going to be the one that you're going to want. And this gives you all these fast update benefits and the ability to just have resources. Part the technology behind that for resources is this thing called MRT, Modern Resource Technology. And this is for Windows runtime apps only. This is how the MRT determines the correct language resources and the image assets for the platform, and device settings. So it looks at the point that the app is downloaded, the user's purchased it, and then this MRT kicks in and it looks at what the phone is that it's going to be installed on, and it only sends up the bits of the bundles that that end device only needs. So it's clever stuff, and it all comes for free as you're a developer, for you as a developer. So that was a lot of slides. It's much easier to look at in a demo. So let me just get back into my machine. After 2 days of this, I nearly forgot my password there. It's been a long haul. Okay, here we go. I've got a simple little solution here with our old friend, the Contoso cookbook. Yay! Two versions of it. A Windows Phone 8.1 version and a Windows Phone Silverlight 8.1 version. There you go. So, just because we can. So let's have a look at WinRT app version of the package of the app manifest here. So this is, let's get all the tabs in a line. These are the different tabs: visual assets, requirements, capabilities, declarations, content URIs, and packaging. The first one is the application. This is the name that will be shown in the programs list, and in the localization session, which was session 8. I talked about how you can localize this as well, so check out the localization session. So this is, at the moment, is just a string called Contoso Cookbook Simple. So that's the name that will be shown in the programs list. That's the entry point, which is the app class. I can think of very few reasons why you'd ever want to change that. The description doesn't get used so much. Then we've got, you can actually set which rotations, if the app only supports specific rotations. This is where you can check or uncheck whether if you are happy for it to go to be installed on the SD card, or for some reason you don't want to. Then we've got whether your app supports toasts or not. Lock screen notifications, this is where you can have icons on there. And then they've got a bit of tile update schedules. Moving across, this is the visual assets. This is where you supply the artwork. So this is the, you can see there's all these different sizes of tiles, and these have all been, are all linked to different images over here in your assets folder. So here we've got the different logos, scale. You see that we just got the default artwork in this one. And you can go off, and if you want to supply artwork at any different scales, you can, but this is the one, the 240 one, you probably want to set. You can go off and find a different one. You go off into your assets and select the particular image that you want to use, which is logo scale 240 is what we're already using, so I'm not going to override that. The badge logo and the splash screen, which is this big 1152 by 1920 image. The splash screen, you also want to make sure, usually what that splash screen is usually your image is actually on a default light gray background. So if you're using, your image has got a background color, you want to set the same color in there, which you can set using a color name, or you can use a hash and then an RGB hex code for the color. And of course, going across, there's obviously loads and loads of other stuff on here. There's the actual hardware requirements that you have to have. Here's the capabilities list, where you check things that it actually has to use in terms of the capabilities. Declarations, this is where you have all of your background tasks declared, your file open picker provider, file safe picker provider. If you are handling file type associations or protocol your associations, we talked a little bit about that in the sharing module, which was module 10. And then share target and update task. Content URIs is a white list. If you're using a web browser control and you're calling out from JavaScript and into C# code. And then finally the packaging, where we've got the publisher display name, the family name, and this is where the generate app bundle is, always or never. And then the other one we've got the WM app manifest, which is our Silverlight one, which is a little bit smaller. This is where we have our app icon, which is the what kind of our Tile is the main tile. Support for large tiles, and then tile images. Again, we go off and you can go off and go and pick the particular image that you want to select for that, which is off down some assets in your project. We also got the navigation page, which is your initial start page, capabilities, long list, hardware requirements, and packaging. So somewhat similar to the other. This is where the prevent deployment to SD cards has ended up in Windows Phone 8.4 for Windows Phone 8.1 projects. And you can also disable automatic backup restore of your apps files up to the cloud every night. This is where the language stuff goes. There is another manifest, of course, in a Silverlight 8.1, which is kind of similar to the WinRT manifest, but is kind of a subset of it. And this is for where you're using any Windows Runtime 8.1 APIs that need to have stuff defined in the manifest. So it's a subset for those things. I mean, the obvious one to pick out is the declarations, which is, again, you can do your background tasks. Much shorter list, but that's appropriate for Silverlight 8.1 application. That's a quick look at the manifest. Now, what about some other features? This is quite nice. Single instance store. So this is handled for you by the store. Again, it comes for free for the developer and the end user. But where they install something which is using some common runtime, so think of a Unity, for example, a Unity framework. So you quite likely have one or more apps installed on a phone that uses Unity. Now, rather than install the kind of common DLLs that the Unity framework ships with an app over and over, so you've got multiple copies taking up unnecessary space, the store will automatically identify that. So whenever you submit a package up to the store, it will figure out what the DLLs are in it, and it will identify these. And whenever you install an app, the user, end user, purchases an app and installs it, the store knows, that Unity, they've already got that version of Unity installed up on the phone. I'm not going to ship these bits of it. So they just get the other bits. So that's real nice as well. The application storage and SD, I've already talked about this. This is available to both. It's an end user feature. They can choose, if they put an SD card in, they can choose to install apps onto it. And they can move apps between the SD card and their phone storage. As we saw in the manifest demo there, you as the developer can prevent that happening if for whatever reason you've got performance specific reasons why you don't trust the speed of an SD card. It just tends to be slower storage than phone storage. So maybe you've got some reasons, you've tested it and finding some failures on SD card. You can check that to prevent the user from installing that app onto the SD card. Oh yeah, everything. Whenever an app goes onto the SD card, you needn't worry about security, because the app and all its storage area, everything to do with it, goes on the SD card, but it is encrypted. So and that can sit alongside the user's, music files or their photographs that they might also store on the SD card. Just the app storage area, the app package, the app little sandbox is encrypted. So, bit of a summary here. I'm not going to go through every one of these features. This is kind of summary of what I've just been saying. So I'll leave you for this to look at when you get the decks, and just it's a summary of all those features that I was just talking about. All right, how do you build a package then in order to get this up to the store? So you need to build an app package, and the way you do that is through Visual Studio, of course. For Windows Runtime apps, WinRT apps, if you right-click on the project, there's a Store sub-menu on the context menu there, and you go Store, Create App Packages, and a little wizard comes up. It asks you some questions. It's very, very simple. Normally allow the store thing to automatically increment it. It kind of takes care of things for you for the version, but you can, if you really feel strongly about it, you can override that and set it manually. There's the generate app bundle thing again. And then the packages to create. Normally you just check neutral, unless you're using some native dependencies in there. Classical example of that is if you're using SQLite, then you would, instead of the neutral one, you probably would check x86 and ARM instead. So you generate different packages for the different target targets. In actual fact, Windows Phone, I believe at the moment, every phone out there is ARM, but that could change. We could have x86. So just build both packages. It's done for you automatically, and that will build the packages ready to be uploaded to the store. For Windows Phone Silverlight apps, there's no specific menu option to build an app package. Every time you build, it creates a zap for you. And a zap is just another name for a zip. If you take a zap file, rename it to .zip, you can just open it with your favorite unzip application. You can open it in Windows Explorer and have a look at what's in it. And that's just created automatically. When you create a package for submission up to the store, you just have to remember to select the release build rather than the debug build. So we built our packages. Now you could just submit them up to the store at this point and they would test it for you. And if you're lucky, it will get it will pass the certification testing and it will end up in the store. But we can actually do some of that automated testing that they do yourself before you do have submitted. So for Windows Phone Silverlight apps, the way you run .WAC, as we call it, is you, again from the store, you right-click on your Silverlight project. There is a store menu on there, but the only option on that store menu in for this kind of project is Launch Windows App Certification Kit. And that runs a various number of tests for you and shows what it is. And I'll show you a demo of this in a minute. For Windows Runtime apps, when you create the app package, then you get the option to run the WAC test as the end of creating the app package. You can actually run up the certification kit manually as well, and again I'll show you. And that will run the tests. There's lots of different validation that you can perform. You select the appropriate option and it will run through loads of different tests. And this actually is the automated testing that Microsoft does itself when you submit your app up to the store. So it will just avoid that delay of letting them do the testing, and then they'll come back and say, oh, you didn't replace any of the default images, that's a classical case, that are in the assets folder, you know, all these tile images. You just had the stock ones that were still in from Visual Studio when you didn't create new project. You've got to change all that, and that's one of the things they test, amongst a lot of other things. So, show you that. So let me open my next little solution. Which looks spookily like the same, the previous one. It's still the Contoso Cookbook Simple. We're going to do the first of all, the Windows WinRT app. Right click on the project, store, create app packages. So this is how you build your app packages. First of all, it's telling you, do you want to build packages to upload to the Windows Phone Store? Yes or no. I can't imagine what you want to do. No, that's what we just asked it to do. Let's just try. So if you say yes, it's going to go off to the Windows Phone Store. It'll make you sign in with your Microsoft account. And then you're getting into sort of the option, so you're talking to the store at the background. So actually, I just want to do the testing at this stage, so we can go through this. You're going to build the package without going off the store and all this reserving app name stuff. We'll do that later on. This is the automatic, you can automatically increment, good idea, or you can, if you really object, you can say that. And then this is where you change, you know, neutral for any CPU out there is probably what you want for most apps, unless you're using, you've got some native components, in which case you would check probably those two. And then you can create the app packages. And it's just going to go off and build our packages. We've got a release build. And then there's the output location. I'm actually going to copy that. We're going to go to the app location. We could launch the Windows App Certification Kit from here. But just to show that you can do it anywhere. I'm going to click on the output location. So this is the location where it has got that that app package. I'm just going to copy that. And then just to show the how you can actually run that anytime, I'm going to go off to my start screen and go Windows App Certification Kit. and it's picked that one up. We're going to run it, and these are the different options. You can validate a Windows Store app, a phone app, a desktop app, or a desktop device app. We're going to do a phone app. This is where we're going to go off to the find the file. So we can actually navigate to where it is, which is here, and go down to my current demos, which is this guy, and we're into this. And this is the app we're just building. There's our app packages. This is the current version, and so we can say, we've selected the Zap. Then we got all the tests that you need to run. So we can say, yes, I want to run them. And it's now running the WAC against that. We're validating the app, and it's checking the artwork and capabilities and all sorts of other stuff. This is going to, like I said, is the certification testing that they do. And I should take just a few seconds to run. And in a minute we'll get the report, and then we can have a look at what it's doing. While that is going, actually, just let me go back to Visual Studio, and what I'll do is show you how to launch the other one. I'm not going to go ahead and do it, but you can actually obviously do that one. We've got to build it. Okay, yeah, build. Build that project. And we'll go back to the whacking that's running in the background in a moment. So that's built. And then we can go store, launch Windows. And again, we're running the whack, but this time against... Oh, it says, oh yeah, I can't do this. Two things at the same time. So that's the other way of launching it. So this is... Right, we're back with the one that I set off before against the Windows Runtime app. And we're analysing the results, creating the report, saving the report, and... In a minute, we'll be able to have a look at what it says. How long does it take to save a report? Come on. It must be saving a very, very detailed report in a place a very, very long way away or something. Mm-hmm. This is time to go and get a cup of coffee, plan the rest of your day. Right, well, I'm not sure I want to wait forever for this. Maybe we'll come back to see if that's finished later on, because I want to keep moving on this session. When we come back to the next demo, we'll kind of have a quick look at the report. I will tell you up front that what it does is it finds that there's some branding errors in there. So it's detected some default artwork that we haven't actually updated. So we'll have a look at that when we come back, if it's finished. Otherwise, I'll just kill it. All right, so that's the testing thing. How do you make money out of your app? This, after all, well, your objective may be to inform and excite and all the rest of it, and that's absolutely a good thing to do as well. Or maybe you're building apps for a corporation as a branding thing, or extending services out, whatever. But if you want to sell apps and make money, you will want to know about that. So the for paid apps... When you submit your app into the store, you can select what price you want your app to be sold at, which could be zero, could be a free app. Completely free to use without restriction. Another monetization is you give away the app for free, but you have ads in it, so you earn income through ad supporting. So you get a small amount of money from every time anybody sees an ad, or if they click through an ad, you get more as well. You might choose to sell your app for free, but then have additional capabilities inside it that the user can unlock through in-app purchases. Obviously, be careful of this. There's been a lot of justified bad publicity for children buying games on their dad's phone, or mom or dad's phone, and playing the game. And then there's all these kind of, they get to a certain level, and to play the next level, you've got to purchase an in-app purchase, and people have been running up huge bills. So there's been a lot of justified focus on this kind of bill shock stuff. actually, we've got a great feature on Windows Phone called Kids Corner that can prevent all of that sort of thing. So you can actually inactivate the Kids Corner feature and give your kid a list of apps that they're allowed to run. And they get their own start menu with just those apps visible on it. And it's locked through a pin that only you know, of course. So your kid can go and play away on those apps in Kids Corner, and they can't sort of do any in-app purchases or purchase additional apps. You can have, going back to the monetization options, you can have a paid app with a free trial. This is very popular. You allow people to try your app out for a period. And then the top of the one on the list there is the paid app, which obviously the user must purchase it at the point that they select it in order to download and install it. There are pricing tiers that start from 99 cents or equivalent in a local currency, going right up to quite a lot of money. You get 70% of the revenue goes to you as the developer, 30% cut goes to Microsoft. That is industry standard 30-70 split, which is the same as all the other smartphone platforms. So the trial API, this is the where you can have the you can ship your app. It's a paid app, but they can install it for free for a period. So it's up to you. You decide how long the trial is for. So you can have a time-limited trial, or maybe it's a feature-limited trial. So you you kind of allow them to use the app, but when they try and use a feature, they say, I'm sorry, this is not available in the trial edition. You need to purchase this in order to unlock this additional capability. And there's this current app object dot license information. We've got a simulator you can use for obviously doing through using for testing this in debug. And you can just get that license information object at any point in your code and check the is active. Is active means this is a purchased edition of the app. Is trial means the user is currently running it under trial. And you can also, if you've set an expiration date, you can look at that expiration date so you can figure out how long they've been running it under trial. So that you, in that, you make your decisions in your code on which features to allow them to use. In-app purchase is another great way of getting allowing your user to purchase additional functionality. There's two kinds, durables and consumables. And you can have your own payment provider if you don't want to use ours. So durables and consumables, these you register through the store. These aren't physical products. You can't sort of sell a pizza through this. These are virtual products, if you like, that you use to allow the user to unlock additional capabilities, to download additional content that they can use in the app. A durable is something that once they purchased it, they own forever. Like levels, you know, additional levels in a game. And consumables is kind of tokens that they use up over time. So you give them, they purchase 100 tokens that as they use a feature, they spend a token. And when they're gone, they have to purchase more of them. There's this product licenses dictionary in the license information object where you use to check access to in-app purchases. You add in-app purchase products into the store this through the products tab, and this graphic shows you there. You tap on add an in-app product, and they can go off and you go in there and you give it a name and set the pricing, and they get sort of verified as well, and then they're available to use in your app. You submit it. The dialogue you go through is pretty similar to submitting an app. So you set the properties and the description and define pricing for it. This is the in-app product properties. You give it a name, you give it a unique identifier, you just say whether it's durable or a consumable, and then this you can actually give it a time limit on a durable, or and then you actually give a content type, which is of use to the users. They figure it out what it is they're purchasing, and then you pricing you can set and which markets that product is available in. There's loads more options as well. You can select as to which store languages it's available in, you can use keywords to help categorize products in your app. This is what you select to help you find in-app products and help your code find the products that you present to the user in your code logic. The product detail, you have to set for each language your app supports. So this is, I'm afraid, a fairly tedious exercise, but you need to do that so that you're giving the product, the in-app product title, an appropriate for the languages that your app supports. Then in your code, you use this kind of the current app.requestProductPurchaseAsync method. Gets the details of in-app purchases that the user has purchased. So you can then decide at runtime which features to unlock and allow the user to go to that game level or whatever it is. I'm actually a little bit short on time, so let me just, I'm going to show you very quickly. I will show you the demo. I'm going to go for it. Oh, we're still saving the report, so I really am totally not interested in that. There we go. I can't even kill it. This is bad. Where did we go? I hope that's just going to run in the background and not going to upset things. Fortunately, I run it outside of Visual Studio, so I can ignore and pretend that's not happening. Oops. No, not that one. This guy. So this guy, I'm going to add a new button to the main page. It's our Contoso cookbook. Yay! Let's add another button to it, to the main page. I'm going to go off to the document outline. I'm going to go to my app bar. Command bar, I'll go to my primary commands. Let's add ourselves an app bar button. And the icon will be, I wonder if we've got one for purchase. How about buy? No. Let's see, what kind of button should we have? Accept. Never mind. I'll find an appropriate button. We'll find an icon later. Let's call that buy, and save. That's right. Sorry. Remember the scenario here. So it allows you to save the a recipe to the to your local PC. This is the idea. And then I want to have a event handler on that guy. So let's go off and create ourselves a click event handler through that. And I've got a little snippet of code which is the in-app purchase example. So this is it's an awaitable, so I need to put an async on here. App bar button click, and this is where it finds out the list of in-app purchases. It finds the first product listing. It searches the list of products for a in-app purchase with a keyword of save recipe. Now I've already uploaded this to the store for this app. And then it looks, this is where you find out for the license information dot product licenses for the product ID of that in-app purchase item and find out, has the user purchased it? If they haven't purchased it, then we ask them to purchase it by calling this request product purchase async. And then they either purchase it. If they purchase it, we enable the can save capability. Otherwise, we say, no, you can't. So you have to. We put a message up saying, sorry, you're going to have to buy that. So let's try this on the phone. I've got this up here. I've got a real device because it works better on a real device. That's just a little pin on the phone, which I'm going to change later on. It's not the one I use all the time. And let's go onto the device. And, hang on. I've got one little thing I have to fix up on here, which is using Windows UI.popups. There we go. Try it again. Bring up the app. This is running on the phone in a minute. Trying to. Not running on the phone. Hello, Earth calling Visual Studio. Come in, Visual Studio. Oh, it's registering the application to run from layout. Waiting for a required operation to complete. Ah, don't tell me this whack thing is blocking us. I bet it is. Hey, you're going to have to get ready with the explosion. Yeah. Well, that would have shown you that you saw the code, and that's not going to work. And I'm going to kill Visual Studio, I think, see if we can get this to work. Visual Studio's not responding. Let's close Visual Studio. Yeah, just kill it. Go away. And see if we kill the whack. Close that. All right. So it just could make the next demo challenging. Right, what I'm going to do, of course, I've got the slides running on another machine, so what I'm going to do is just do a quick...
Oh, that's... Yeah. I like that one. I haven't seen that. That's cool. Thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah, I'm in trouble here. So let's go to the task manager, see if I can kill the whack that way. It really doesn't want to... doesn't want to go. Where's the whack? There we go. Please go away. Thank you so much. Okay. Right. Because I'm a glutton for punishment, I will try this once more, because actually it won't take long to demo, won't it, if it actually runs. Let's run it on the device. Bring up the display again. Hey, there we go. Thank you. It was the whack was killing everything. So I've now got a save option, and this is the... should go off to the store at this point, and nothing's worked. Oh yes, there we go. Confirm purchase. So it's gone off to the store. This is a real... I've put this up as a beta app. I submitted it into the store. So it's here we go. It's saying you can choose to download this in-app purchase, which is free. So hey, yes, let's download this in-app purchase object into it. And so okay. Inquiring minds may find this error code helpful. All right, and maybe that's something to do with running as a beta. But anyway, you got the idea. So actually in cancel, we come back, and then we're back into our app and says purchase required. So that was an interesting experience on a lot of levels. Okay. You can add support. You can have ad support in there. There's a number of different ads. We have one. Microsoft Pub Center is excellent, but there are a number of other ones as well. We don't require you to use ours. Right, finally, the how do you actually submit up to the portal? So you have to, first of all, just think about this shared identity apps. Now, one of the things I'm going to show you in a minute is you reserve app names, and they must be unique. When you reserve an app name through the Dev Center, that's yours for up to a year. If you don't submit an app using that name within a year, you lose that usage of that name. Now, if you once you've reserved a name, at the point that we actually submit the app up for into the store, you choose that reserved name, and that ties it up, ties it to that particular application. If you then submit, like you say that you've just submitted the Windows app, and if you then submit the Windows Phone app and choose the same reserved names, they're linked together forever. In fact, you can't actually undo it once it's done. They are considered to have a share the same identity. You'll just see this thing, a thing called a PFN. If they have the same PFN, that's a package family name. Essentially, that's when you share, when you reserve an app name, that creates a PFN. And so when you assign your Windows app and your Windows Phone app to the same reserved name, they end up having the shared PFN. This means that they have a shared identity. What that means for the end user, is that in the store, they see against the app this little Windows Phone overlaid over a Windows icon shown on the top there. And if you look carefully on the store, you see the app. It says free, and then you see that little icon for Quiz Bowl. That means that if they purchase the app on one for free, they get automatic entitlement to the app on the other platform as well. They have to go and install it, but they don't have to pay any money. This is a bad example because it's free anyway. But if it actually was a paid app, they'd pay for it just once, and then they can install it for free on the other platform. Regardless of actually, because you could actually submit to the store different prices for the Windows app and the phone app. But if they buy it at the cheaper price on the one store, they get it for free on the other. So actually, there's no point in having different prices. But that enables all this goodness that we've talked about, like you get this roaming data, roaming settings. So they use the app on one device and they change their background color, and it automatically pops up on the other device with the same background color. And you get the same push notification IDs, and the push notifications go to both and that sort of thing. Load of goodness that comes out of this. And they get access to in-app purchase durables as well. So you reserve your name. You can do this from Visual Studio, and after you reserve your name, you later on will submit your app. So reserving a name is an early part of the process. You clearly cannot reserve a name that somebody else has got, like that trivial example of Facebook. Oh, who would have that name?
I've never heard of it.
But if you have that, and if your name is available, you can then associate your Windows Phone app also with the Windows app as well, if you wish. You don't have to do that. You do that with this store associated app with the store, and this brings up this wizard where you can select one of the names an existing one that you've already reserved. So you know, if you end up you building an app and you reserved a name and then you throw it away because it's rubbish, and you start a whole new project and you build it up and you go into store, associate app with the store, you can select the same name you've already reserved before because it's like you're starting over. Or you can create a new one, reserve a new one, like with the just entering one at the bottom there. It is a manual process for Silverlight 8.1 apps, which I will show you. Then you set your pricing, you select which markets it goes to. There are stricter content policies for China, so just be aware of that. There are game ratings for games that you have to enter. Then you've got your distribution channels. Does it go to the public store when it's passed through certification? Is it hidden? It goes into the public store but doesn't turn up in any of the listings. So it's one little way of having private apps because you know the link to that app in the store. Or beta, as we say in the UK, or beta, as you say over here. So that means that you just put the Microsoft email addresses of a Microsoft account, like a Hotmail or Outlook.com or something, and they can install the app for a period of testing. It never expires, so you can have apps that stay in beta forever. But beta apps can't then sort of bump them up to go into the public store. So you'd actually then have to go through a new submission process. Beta apps don't go through the full testing that public ones do. And then you can publish it. And if it's a Silverlight app using MPNS, you can put a push notification certificate in there and your games rating certificates. And then you choose the app to upload. And you kind of saw a bit of that already. Then you can upload multiple packages for each supported OS version. You upload it to the store. You enter loads of information for each of the languages and images for each of the languages that you are supporting, which can be a tedious exercise, but it has to be done. Promotional images you submit as well, which go onto the store apps where people are browsing on the web, the store, or in the store app on the phone, so they see some of these promotional images. So if your app is picked for being one of a featured app in the store, then you know they'll use this big background image that you supply and some of the bigger icons. So it's important to take the trouble to supply all this promotional stuff. You need to supply some legal URLs and privacy URLs and a support email address. So you have to specify these kind of things. And then when you also got this technical exceptions, if you've got a username and password that needs to be submitted, then in order for the testers to test your app, you can add it in the certification notes. Quick little demo of showing the process of this. This is the great last and greatest version of the Contoso cookbook. This is the one. This is the one we're going to go for. So I'm going to go to store. Associate app with the store. Have we created the app packages? That wasn't quite what I was expecting. Just let me consult my notes for a second. I need to go to the Windows Phone Dev Center, it says here. Okay. That's because I already submitted it. So Windows Phone Dev Center, this is the Dev Center. This is my Dev Center, actually. And we can go to Submit an App. So first of all, you need to enter some information. So we're going to app in info. So this is the first page. So we're going to give it an alias, and you can reserve the name here, or we can pick one that we've already got before. Let's take the Jumpstart Demo 001. We can associate our app with it. This is so now we've associated our app with that name. You give it a category, so we're going to go for health and fitness and diet and nutrition. And then we can say, do we want any pricing? No, actually, I'm happy for this to be free, so there's no point in having free trials. We're going to send this to all markets, and when we're happy with that, we can say, we're good with that. And go to more options. You can say to the public store, or we can say, oh no, I'm going to go on the beta. And if you want to do that, then we can put some email addresses in here. I'm on a US keyboard here. Oh my goodness, what is it?
Yeah. Are you looking for the hash again?
Yeah.
It's right above the enter key.
No, ampersand.
Oh, the ampersand.
Yeah.
How? I was all ready to help.
You know what? I think I might go to the public store. It'll fail anyway. Yeah, there we go. Okay, and we'll publish manually. It won't actually. There are problems in it actually, so it won't complete. So we won't end up with a rubbish app called Jumpstart Demo 01 in the store. So that's the first step, and in a minute it's going to ask us to upload the actual app package that we've got. So we need to now go and tell it, okay, that's the app info. Where is the package? So we're going to go off to go and find our app package. So we go off to where I previously built it, which is... I've got a link up here somewhere. Here we go. God, how many demos? There's so many. app packages, and then we got 1 to 0. So here's our app upload, and it's going to upload the file. So this is where we've got our built output that we built before, and we're going to you go off to when that's saved, we move on to the next stage where we enter some more details like the description and the description of the update. Here we go. So we've got our version. We'll let the system do that. Then we've got to put a description for the store. It's an awesome app. And description of update. Well, that's optional, so we don't need to do that. Keywords. Store. Help people find your app. Recipes. Food. You know, whatever. So you can add some. This helps people when they're doing a random search. Then you've got to supply some images. So again, we've got to go off to supply some artwork. So we go off to here, to our project, which is over here. Let's go up back. Oh, there it goes. Aptile icon, and you see the process. And we do all this. We need to have a screenshot. You've got to have one. So we go off and, oh dear me. Wish it would just go back to the same place. That would be really kind of helpful. And there we go. And there's a screenshot, and that's loaded in as well. So this is the bare minimum of the stuff that you have to supply, and then you save. And the next bit, you go off and sort of say which markets, and enter a bit of bit more description. And so it goes on, but I'm going to leave it at that. You get the idea about how the process of submitting it. We're actually nearly there, so I think optional stuff. Oh, actually, right, we're just going to review and submit, and we probably can submit that up for verification. Yeah, it looks like they're happy, they're good, so there's our app, and we can just... Oh, it seems to want some other information. Oh, we got to edit some more stuff. So anyway... I'm going to leave it at that because I'm out of time, frankly. Interesting, though, that is. And that actually wraps up the store. So
I'm tired.
Yeah, just submitted an app in record time there. So I hope that led you through the process and you get a feel for what it's like to submit an app. It's, you know, you've got a fair amount of information, but remember, this is how your users decide whether your app is worth installing. So you need to spend a bit more time than the 5 minutes I spent on it there in order to really make sure that you've got the right screenshots and the good artwork and good description, and you're also supporting users in different locales if it's a multilingual app. All right, so we're going to take a break, and then we're going to have a deeper dive on Universal Apps with Matthias.
That'll be fun.
We'll see you soon.